Like, that's what
Let's
I'm saying.
Turning it into that.
If they're making 100 affordable homes, yeah. I want to see 100 affordable homes.
That's great.
Because
I'll show you. I'll take you out.
What happens is London Larry comes. I mean, I'll just be watching Top Boy. They come knocking on the door.
That's what we
Eviction. Do. Eviction.
We're doing Summer House. Looking at Summer House.
Did you? No, don't admit to that. Come on. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk about what your best friends do so you don't have to. Today we are back, people. Season 2, back and we better. Mama made it. Yes. Today I'm joined by my best friend, the town planner and PT Sophie.
Hello.
Sophie, how you doing?
I'm all good. I'm a bit nervous, but I'm good.
Don't be nervous. You're in good hands. You're in good hands. Today is going to be fun. Let's loosen you up. We like to start with a little icebreaker.
Okay.
What did you want to be growing up?
I was thinking about this. I don't really know. You know when you think, was it a pop star? Was it a, I don't even know, like a dolphin, like working with dolphins or something? I can't really put my finger on it. I think it may have even been something like a vet.
Okay.
You know, like when you practiced, when you played, when you were a kid, you were like, this is what I want to be.
Okay. You wanted to give life to animals.
Something like that.
All right.
I can't even stand it.
All right. So you wanted to be a vet. You've ended up in town planning and you're a PT as well. Talk us through your journey to this point briefly.
So where do we start? So I went to uni to do town planning. That's what I decided I wanted to do.
Okay.
That came about just through A-levels and going to universities to look around. And I was like, right, this is a bit of me. Meant to be like shaping the world, shaping London, the UK, all of this. So I did my master's. So I went to Bristol, did 3 years there. Then I did my master's in France.
Did you?
Yeah.
Allez-vous? I don't even know what I just said.
Allez-vous? So I lived in France for a year to do my master's.
In town planning?
In town planning, yeah. Regeneration and sustainability.
Did they teach it in French or English?
No, English.
Okay. Oh, so it's like fake.
But I still learned French out there.
Okay, you did.
And I had to ask for a bottle of rosé and all of that. So the most important things.
Yeah, come on.
And then I moved back to London, struggled to find a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to live in Bristol, which is where I studied, struggled to find a job. So I moved back home. And then just got into town planning. That was started working for a local authority,
mm-hmm.
then got into kind of private companies. And then I used to do fitness, like go to my friend's classes. And one day she was looking for a new trainer and said, you'd be great at this. Why don't you just start doing your level 2, level 3?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, sure.
But there's no level 1?
No level 1, no.
Just straight into level 2?
Straight into 2, okay. There is one, but I skipped it.
Okay.
I was just so good that I just went straight to 2. Oh, no, so level 2 is fitness instructor, level 3 is your PT.
Okay.
So I started doing level 2 fitness instructor, but I was doing that at the same time as teaching classes. So mm-hmm. I worked full time,
mm-hmm.
then taught a couple of classes like of an evening and weekend. And the fitness side just spiraled from there. So it was only ever classes. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really interested in being a PT because
yep.
I thought I don't really want to have responsibility of other people on me. I just want to do my own thing and that's it.
Yeah.
And then fast forward however many years. No, do you know what it was? I was moving to South London.
Okay.
So I was quitting the gym entirely. And I was like, I don't even know what the fitness holds for me now.
Okay.
I'm going to be a planner. That's it.
Yeah.
That was in March 2020. Lockdown happened. And that's when everything changed in terms of fitness. And that's when it became an even bigger part of my life. And I was proper like 50-50 PT, fitness instructor, planner. And then had a complete burnout in my full-time career that I quit everything in November 2020 just to do fitness.
Wow.
So it went from town planner, starting to do a bit of fitness, 50-50. Nah, let's just do the fitness.
I'm
so burnt out. Like it was a really bad time.
And talk me through, like you mentioned, obviously 2020, so coronavirus. Mm. You're about to leave the fitness industry.
Yeah, completely.
And then you did like 180. What was the factors that kind of brought that about?
So I was going to leave because it was always a bit of a side thing, mm-hmm. you know, just doing the classes with my friends. And then because we were moving to South, it just wasn't going to work because mm-hmm. the gym that we worked in was in North London. So that the commute just wasn't, I couldn't make it make sense. So I was fine with it. I was like, that's it, done my bit. And then my friend launched an app. What did my Kira plug?
Hold tight. Kira London.
And that spiraled, that blew up from Instagram. She then created an app. One of the, so Sinead started teaching classes. She then asked me to get involved. And because of that, you were doing it out of the front, your front room.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it so easily on top of a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my, I'm sure it was with a lot of people, that was my respite. That was my way to kind of get through it all.
Okay. I was about to say that was your respite. It sounds tiring. It sounds tiring to me. I don't know about you.
Because you know what? I was so burnt out with work.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is, because I don't know about you, but when you were in lockdown, we were working like 12-hour days. There was nothing else to do apart from like social beers on Zoom. Like,
yeah.
All our work through. So that's just what I did. And then as we started to kind of get out of it, I was like, okay, cool. Let me finish my my level 3
mm-hmm.
qualification, because I just hadn't finished it. And then where I was just having such a meltdown with normal work, I was like, I don't think I can make this happen. I've got to make fitness happen.
So do you still do town planning now? Or
still do town planning now. So I ended up going back into it.
Okay, there we go.
Again, full circle. But that was because I was working in a really corporate company and was completely burnt out. And how it worked in lockdown in that company was all the juniors got furloughed and those in the role above me were parents.
Mm-hmm.
So everything fell on the level that I was at.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't healthy. I was like, this is... it's not for me, I can't do this anymore. And when normality started to come back, it didn't really feel like there was any relief. It was mm-hmm. just, it was still the same. You were still doing the grind and it was just, life is too short. So then quit all of that, did fitness. And then another friend of mine has a business, a planning company, which is who I work for now. And I just said, look, okay, I want to get back into it. You're who I want to work for, because it's the perfect balance. It's a female-led, five-year-old company, and it's everything. I worked with her before, so I knew that that's where I wanted to be with the values and all of that.
All right, I hear that. I mean, it sounds like you got a lot going on. I think let's break this up into two sections. So we'll go town planning first, and then we'll get back into the PT side. So for anybody who is listening to this and wants to get into town planning, what the hell is it? Like, you kind of brushed upon it, but how would you define town planning?
I always find it so hard because people think you like work in SimCity. Is that what you
said? Yeah. SimCity, yeah.
But what it is all about development and buildings and creating. Ultimately, it's about creating nice places for nice people. So we might have a client that has a building and they would like to make some money on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we tell them how, in policy terms, they could make it a more exciting building.
Okay.
It doesn't sound very exciting, but honestly, it is.
It is. It is. And is it for private clients or is it government or is it a mixture
of
both?
So we do it for clients and it has to go to the local authority. So the local authority, the government, is who makes the decisions on the planning applications, whether it's allowed or not.
Okay. And you mentioned the fact that you studied town planning at uni mm-hmm. and then you did a master's. Do you feel like you needed to do that to get into the town planning work that you're doing at the moment?
No. So there's a reason why people do masters in planning, so that you can get an accreditation. So
okay.
you have to be a master of the Royal Town Planning Institute, which
okay.
I am.
Okay.
And you have to have certain accreditations to be able to even get that.
Okay. It sounds very official.
Yeah, I know.
Master.
Right? Let's start with my name. Hang on a sec. Yeah, so you don't have to, and there's plenty of ways into it, as there is with anything in this world.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the clearest way for me to do it. So I just...
Yeah, I hear that. And then you mentioned the fact that when you first came out of uni, you were struggling to get a job.
Mm.
Was it in town planning that you were struggling
to
get a job?
Yeah, but I think I don't envy anyone that really comes out of uni or is trying to start out in their career, because it's the whole battle of you've got no experience. Mm. Well, how am I going to get experience without experience?
Exactly.
And the way that I got experience was by doing unpaid work. Can you even do unpaid work anymore?
That's
I don't
so
think
mad.
You can.
It's so
But that's how it started off. And I worked in, I just managed to be doing 2 weeks work experience in a local authority. And I was so great. They were like, we can't let you leave. We have to pay you.
Okay. And then they put you onto the full time.
Yeah, that's how it worked.
Okay. So to anyone listening to this, if you're struggling to get a foot in the door, if you have the means, do a little bit of free work experience.
Yeah.
Or maybe get another side hustle on the side that will pay
side
for
hustle.
You to.
I feel like these days, I only say it because we do some interns at work. I think these days you have to pay like travel or something. Like if you're doing it for a certain period of time, the companies normally pay for your lunch or travel. So mm-hmm. that can be covered. But it's worth its weight in gold in terms of getting a foot in the door and actually understanding the job a bit more.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned the fact that you're helping these companies to make their buildings essentially make more money. Talk me through what a typical day and week looks like for you in town planning.
So there's so many different elements of it, and that's why I always struggle with explaining it. So let's take yesterday, for example, as a day. I would get in, and you're kind of obviously a lot of like email chasing up, but catching up with clients about how they're, so there might be current projects that we're working on. Mm-hmm. So we're updating them on those, having meetings, but we also deal with local authorities, and if we've got applications that are in the system and if there's problems with it, we work with them. So it's kind of a whole day of negotiating, whether that's with a client and trying to understand what they want and how we can make them happy. Mm-hmm. Same with the local authority. And also kind of working with the junior members of the team to
upskill them.
Yeah, and understand exactly what role they're in.
No, I hear you. And do you only work in London, or do you work like all over the UK?
No, all over the UK. So much more central London, and that's where I've always been. But we do a bit more outside of London as well, which is quite interesting in terms of shaping. And when you go on, even if you go on like field, like weekends away, I was going to say field trips, but weekends away,
yeah.
You look at things differently. Like, oh, that's a nice building. What's that? Oh, yeah. What are they doing here? So you look at the world differently, which is quite nice.
All right. I understand that. You mentioned the fact that, you know, the job burns you out. What is it about the job that burns you out? How many projects are you handling at any one time?
So I think at the moment I wouldn't, like now, if I ever burn out, it's because I work two jobs, because that's my own.
It's your own, it's your own doing. Own, yeah. Okay.
But before, it was very much because it was in that COVID time, and I was just doing, we were doing too many roles in one. So you lost the different tiers almost.
Was it still quite lucrative during COVID? Because obviously people were like leaving. I mean, everyone's locked down, right?
Yeah.
There's no, you're not allowed to leave your house. What was going on with like the valuation of buildings? Did it impact your work at all?
Yeah, to be honest, it made it busier than ever because the construction could still carry on.
Okay.
Do you remember? So the building could still happen. So it didn't really slow down at all. All it was that we were under-resourced as planning consultants, which made it difficult.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bit of nervousness, but that really was the fallout of Brexit. Mm-hmm. So it'd been a few years of nervousness, and people were still wanting to build, or they were tied into funding, so they just had to move forward with stuff. So it was busy, and it still is busy, which is great. But yeah, the burnout was very much because of that, but also the lack of people around. Now it's much more balanced, and that's why I work for the company I work for, because they get it.
Nice, nice. And typically, how many projects would you be working at any one time?
You did already ask that. Sorry, I just ignored it.
yeah.
It depends. I've probably got about 20, I would say, 20 to 25 at the moment. But they're of all different scales. So it could be like someone's getting a rear extension to the house. It could be 150 new homes in a local authority. So mm-hmm. The range of projects is completely different, but you've got, as with most jobs, so many conflicting deadlines, pressures, and that's what, you're always going to get pinch points, so there's typically always going to be burnout whether you're feeling chilled or not. It's managing all of that.
I hear it. And with all of the different size projects, et cetera, as a town planner, do you get like commission on the deals that you're planning
but
for? I'm just like, where's the incentive?
Yeah, you can do, like sometimes we do it, we might do like a win bonus on the amount of homes, or there may be introduction fees if you found like a parcel of land for someone. So it can work that way, and you see it more in a small company because mm-hmm. you have the control of that. But yeah, sometimes we do success fees, which are great if you know it's definitely going to go through. But it's such an up and down industry, and there's no real one rule.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one rule. So the confidence does start to deplete sometimes. Right? Like, show it for our success fee on and hope for the best.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And like on that, what would you say is like a common misconception about town planning? What do people...
I would say that it's about money. Like, people think it's a lot about developers and developers making money. That is what it's about, but it's not all that it's about. Like, mm-hmm. people do things for the greater good as well. Maybe hard to believe, but they do.
Do they actually?
Yeah, I've got some schemes that I work on, and let's say it's like 100 homes that mm-hmm. they got planning permission for homes, 100 homes, and they're trying to make all of the homes affordable homes.
But what happened? They're trying. You said
they try. They've got funding to do it.
Like, that's what I'm
saying.
They're
turning it into that.
If they're making 100 affordable homes, yeah. I want to see 100 affordable homes.
That's great.
Because
I'll take you out.
What happens is London Larry comes. I mean, I'll just be watching Top Boy. They come knocking on the door.
That's what we
eviction,
do.
Eviction.
We're doing summer house. Knocking down summer house.
Did you? No, don't admit to that. Is. Come on. Oh, okay, so the people who are doing things like in summer house,
yeah.
You're one of those.
Yeah.
But legit, obviously, you know. Yeah. Do shine.
We don't,
Sorry.
No spoilers.
Okay, so what advice would you have for individuals or communities looking to engage in their own town planning initiatives or advocate for specific
challenges? Wow, that's a great question.
Yeah, hold tight, ChatGPT.
I've been doing their research. What was the question again? You don't even understand.
What advice would you give for individuals or communities looking to engage in their own town planning initiatives or advocate for specific changes?
Don't get involved. Leave it to the professionals. That wasn't out of a job. No, to be fair, in London, lots of local communities are really involved in what's going on. So, all right, it might be fictional, but Summer House, for example.
Yeah.
If in London, there's loads of things like that. So they do what's called estate regeneration. So they would demolish Summer House, but they're going to replace it with loads of new homes. So there will be better homes for the people that currently live in Summer House.
That's a lie.
But don't get me wrong, it's going to completely destroy their community. But in terms of the flats, so you know where you used to live?
Yeah.
If they did estate regen there, you would get...
Stockwell. SW9, by the way, but I don't live there anymore, so you can't find me. Sorry.
You would get reprovided with another 3-bed flat.
Yeah.
But it would be so much bigger. The spec would be completely different because it has to be, because it has to comply with guidelines. Yeah. So yes, you're destroying a community and it's never going to be the same, but the product for product comparison is so much better and you should be getting a better quality of life.
So I hear you. I've heard you, but my partner works for the local council, and my understanding of how this stuff works is that, let's say there's a regeneration project, they're like, yeah, we'll rehouse you, like, but you got to take anywhere where we rehouse you, or you fund yourself. So they might go and rehouse you in Bradford,
yeah,
or them places, and it's like not necessarily the building they're rebuilding at that point.
Yeah, so there's, what's it called? Relocation. There's meant to be temporary accommodation, and then as part of the large schemes, the Mayor of London is meant to secure, so you're meant to reprovide every single home that you're replacing, mm-hmm, and some. So legally, that's what you should be doing, is bio who lives in this flat here, you may have to go here while we demolish it, but then you can come back into this shiny house.
That's what should happen.
And should happen, yeah. And normally they phase it, so there will always be, because I know this happened in Barnet, there's... an estate called Dollis Valley, and that happened there. They did a big regen, but they've gone from like flats to houses. And the way they did it is they phased the demolition. So some people did get kicked out and then came back in, but others, they made sure that the houses were built before they even moved. So they moved. Nice. So it was like quite a nice little loop. So that's a good story. So obviously it's never all going to happen the way it should.
Okay. So Sadiq and them man. I hear you. So sometimes Sadiq and them man do good, but a lot of times they don't.
Yeah.
Do better.
Bun Sadiq.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. You heard it here first. You spoke about it earlier, like the 100 house project, but are there any other notable success stories or best practices from your career that you believe other town planners could learn from?
Oh, that's another good question. Wow. Yeah, there was one actually. It's called Blackfriars Crown Court. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool, it's like an old, Top Boy was actually filmed in it.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the court scenes, I think it was last season. Blackfriars Crown Court, it's making it a new office building, but it's like completely sustainable. Like sustainability was at the forefront of development. Mm-hmm. So it's lots of like urban greening, lots of buzzwords, but it's basically a really good story in terms of not having a big impact on the carbon footprint and enhancing ecology. And the developers were great, and it wasn't like, it never felt like money grabbing. It was like, this is a really cool story. And it was plastered on loads of like articles, and it was used as best practice. Mm-hmm. Hold tight.
That is amazing. Sick. And to anybody who potentially wants to get into town planning, what would your advice be to them?
Don't.
Oh!
Get experience working in local authorities and then looking to get a degree. The way that you can do a degree, but there's different ways to do a degree. You don't have to go straight into uni. You could do an apprenticeship degree, so you don't even need to have your A levels. There's loads of different routes. So if you're really serious about it, just do a little Google and find out.
I hear you. And you touched upon some of the stresses earlier, but what would you say the most stressful thing about being a town planner is?
Client expectations, unrealistic expectations, I'd say, because you're the middleman a lot of the time. So you've got the client, the local authority, and you are, like I said earlier, you've got to negotiate between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And you're feeding back a lot of the local authority's responses. And whilst you're trying to try and negotiate to get the best outcome, that best outcome may not be the outcome that was aspired for the client or what they really wanted. Mm-hmm. And it's like keeping those expectations or trying to meet those expectations and then keep those clients as well. That's the stress.
I hear it.
They have pressures from above as well, and they're constantly hounding your phone. You're like,
happens to me. Happens to me as well in my job. All right, we've spoken about the most stressful thing. What would you say the most rewarding thing about being a town planner is?
The most rewarding thing is seeing things come to life. So when you've got planning permission and you see it built and you see people using what you got planning permission for, it's really satisfying. Like, I did do that. I did shape something.
Sick. And obviously, you know, you're working on lots of projects. In terms of like where you see yourself going in the town planning industry, where do you see yourself in like 5 and 10 years? Do you want to be like developing, like be the head of developing buildings? What do you want to do?
I like where I am. I would like to have more of a role in terms of the general town planning environment is still led by middle-aged white men. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. I was even at a breakfast yesterday and there was probably 4 women, and it's just, it's a male dominated environment. And it still is. You know, I'm very fortunate. I work in a female led company, and not fortunate that men are the minority, but fortunate that that's not the representation. But if you go into any like meeting room, it's like 5% of the client team, the project team. And it's like, really? Are we still doing that in 2023? And I would like to be part of seeing that change. You go to so many talks about how it's going to change, but you never really see it. And then you have extremities where they're making like all female project-led teams. It's like, it also doesn't need to be that.
Yeah.
But let's find a medium.
A happy balance.
Happy. And especially, sorry, well, last point is, no. When you're in development and you're shaping the future, you've got people who are like 50, 60 at the top of making decisions, but they're not the ones that are going to live through the decisions they're making. And it's just really frustrating.
Nose perspective.
Yeah.
They haven't got like the current perspective. That really hits home. And I suppose in your experience, knowing that like you're part of that 5% and going into those male dominated meeting rooms, number one, how does it make you feel? And like, how do you navigate those situations?
Yeah, it's hard because you have to learn not to let it get to you. And I'm so used to it now. So I walk into a room, I'm like, okay, they see a little white blonde girl. Like, I don't think they think I'm 30 or I've got my experience. They always would undermine me, and you've just got to walk in with confidence. Mm-hmm. And there's so many times people just speak over you or just disregard what you say. There's even one time where I had a client and they were just, was it a client or a consultant? No, it's another consultant. They were just saying everything I would say, but in a kind of different way. And the client would be listening to them and not me. You know, like, okay, it is what it is. Like, you throw your weight around. There's no point competing with people, but you just have to have that confidence. And if you're good enough at it, people are going to be on your side.
Take you seriously.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you see the change happening with more women getting into town planning?
Not really. Again, it's what I always struggle with when it comes to kind of like just in the world, I guess, like the female divide is it doesn't have to be women in planning. It doesn't have to be like, it's about 50-50, you know, like trying to get to, and it's not just women and men, it's race, it's all of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But let's have diversity across the board rather than then just making it, oh, let's just do a women's group and no men are allowed. Like, but that's the opposite of what we're trying to do. It's about having level of quality.
I hear you. Just focus on being diverse.
Yeah.
Don't focus on...
And genuinely like, diverse.
Yeah,
as well.
That's it. We've had a few DEI people on this podcast. If you've not listened, make sure you go back, check those episodes out. Grrr, can plug my own podcast. Okay, so that was town planning.
Yeah.
Like you said, you also do the PT in.
Yeah.
Talk me through like your transition from classes to PT, and like, is it something that you always saw yourself doing, or like you said, it's just come around through like circumstance and what's been going
on? I never even considered it. And when my friend said to me like, oh, you should just train in, you're so good at it, you love classes, why don't you do your level 2? I was like, yeah, I guess I could. And it did just come naturally to me. So I was very fortunate in that sense. Mm-hmm. But then again, I was like, no, I'm never going to do my level 3. I'm never going to be a PT. That's just not for me. And then fell into that as well.
So level 2 is classes.
Level 2 is fitness instructor.
Fitness instructor.
Classes.
Okay.
Level 3 is PT.
How long are each of the courses? How much work is there actually to do to anybody who's thinking that they want to do a level two or three?
These days, it's pretty easy. Anyone can do it, to be honest with you. So I see some of the trainers in Pure Gym. Of course, not getting easier.
Jeez, the shade.
Because, again, that was a benefit of COVID. Everything became online. So you don't have to do assessments on that go to the gyms to do assessments. You just film it yourself, which is pretty crazy. They just tick it off. It's so virtual. So it's easy to do and you can do it as quickly as you want to. Like, it's all open book when it comes to anatomy and understanding the movement of exercises.
What's the pass marks? Is it like 70%, 80%? I'm like, how much do people have to know when you're doing exams? Is there exams?
Well,
this thing?
It's exams, but it's all open book. Everything is open book. Yeah.
Yeah, but this, like...
Everything. Apart from the only thing that isn't is... When you do the assessment, as in you're doing your fake PT session, but you just film it in front of a video, in front, like on your phone, you send it to them.
Yeah. If anybody fails their level two or three, Lord help them.
Honestly, I don't even think failing is an option.
Okay, good. But like, I've never seen a PT, well, I've never even had a PT session, to be honest, but I don't see them checking their book. Worry. Oh, but according to chapter 3, verse 6.
Because that's
you
not
should
what
be,
it is.
But okay, so is it something that you're always learning in as well, right? Because like you say, anatomy isn't ever evolving, but there's always like new exercises and new kind of fads, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I would say like level two and level three, well, level three especially, is the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. Like some PTs probably just do that and that's it. They never educate themselves again, where there's so many courses when it comes to nutrition, biomechanics. That's a whole other can of worms that you can get into in terms of the movements, the hinge movements, and understanding how to program for clients, especially if you go from PT to online. I think it's like with any career, you should always, you can never know too much.
Yeah. And is that something that you've done as well? So have you learned about the nutrition side?
Yeah. So I ended up just doing my own additional education because I thought if I'm taking on more and more clients, I need to have a bigger breadth of knowledge because everyone's going to have different challenges. No two clients are the same. Mm-hmm. And then I found a website where you just subscribe for a certain, I think it's £49 a month and you get so many courses within that, and they're, it's almost like CPD, you know, continued professional development.
Yeah, it is.
And you can do online coaching, biomechanics, nutrition. There's stuff on kind of menopause or obesity, loads of different elements. And I just think if you're working with the general population, you should always be educating yourself because you're always going to come up against different things.
I hear it. I've got so many questions.
Fire
on
away.
What would you say to anybody who's looking to just improve their overall fitness? Why is it important to take your health seriously?
Because you're going to live longer. It's important for your mental health more than anything as well. And I think if you do it correctly, it's a perfect way to escape the reality of life. Like, if you're genuinely about fitness for yourself and not just because you want to look a certain way or you want to lift a certain way, it's the perfect way to switch off from the world, I find.
Okay.
That's good answer.
Yeah, no, good answer. No. Hey. this is nice. So, do you do workout plans for people?
Yes, I do.
Of course.
Follow
me
on Instagram, underscore, I'll say about it.
You said that so quickly. Say it slower so they can hear you.
I'm plugging myself quickly.
Yeah, okay. Look,
yeah, I do. So I do online plans. I do online coaching, online plans, personal training one-to-one, and then we're in a gym and on an app.
And yeah, my follow-up to that is, how do you assess a client's fitness level and individual needs when developing a personalised workout plan for them?
So it's difficult when you do online because there's clients I've never really met. And they're just trusting me with it. I'm like, even I find it weird. I'm like, I don't even trust myself. Joking, I do. I'm the best out there. But it's just about, there's a park you, so it's just about you, they let you know if they've got any issues, and then I do a personalized questionnaire, and it's very much kind of, how do you rate yourself? And you've just got to believe in that person, and then you set out your programs based on their goals and where they see themselves. But when it's one-to-one, it's so much easier because you can see when people are struggling, when people are finding it hard. Although you will get the odd client that doesn't look like they're struggling, and the next minute they're like, I'm gonna be sick. Like, So yeah, it's two different ways. One-to-one, it's quite easy in terms of just, you've got a bit of a baseline and you work through it with them. But online, it's a bit more challenging because there's a lot more trust.
And obviously you're a female PT. Do you only work with female clients or do you work with males as well?
I only work with females because I find them, like, men, I don't really understand the male body.
Understood.
So I feel like...
It wouldn't make sense.
I can't really do it. I might lift heavier than the some men, but I can't really be like...
You'd be surprised. The weight's just got it. It's a lot.
But I feel like... I don't know. I always feel like... You can have a male PT to a female client, but I would feel weird teaching a man.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Here's another question. I'm putting you on the spot. Why is it that when I'm at the gym, male PTs are always giving out freebies to women and not men?
Don't know. Probably because they think they're easier to like lure.
Okay. Oh, what? Like men have got like the ego.
Yeah,
like,
you
can't teach
like,
me nothing.
Like they're easy to prey on.
Okay.
You know, that's just my assumption.
All right, cool. And for anybody who's like looking to get into it, how do you source all of like your personal clients?
Mainly through Instagram. I'm quite lucky because we've got the app. I say we, it's Kira's app.
Yeah.
Because of Body by Kira, most of my clients come through that or came through the gym I initially worked in just through followers, really. I've never worked in a commercial gym.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of people start out and that's how you do it. You know, you pay your rent and they give you clients and that's probably the best way to do it if you don't have a following.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, yeah, I just try and you've probably seen it enough, try and ram it down everyone's throat. You can build a big bum, trust me.
And obviously like the Body by Kira squad, there's like quite a few of you, like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
10 of you or something.
Oh yeah, trainer-wise, yeah. God, I don't even know how many now, probably around 10. Yeah, every like range of trainers from kind of, here we go with the plug.
Yeah, yeah, go.
Yoga, to Pilates, to step classes, to lifting. There's a whole variety.
What, so there's a different trainer for every like discipline?
Not a different, like everyone has their own speciality. Speciality, yeah.
Okay.
So we can do it all, but there's people that do certain things. Like I couldn't do Pilates.
Okay, so yeah, because my question was going to be, obviously you're all part of like the same team in terms of like personal clients and that. Are you like beefing for the same customers because you're all going after female customers?
Are we? No. The thing is, as a PT or as a coach, you've got to have a USP.
Yeah.
And that's what you've got to do. Like I now cannot lose my bum because that's what, if I haven't got that, I haven't got no clients. But you've got to have something that sets you apart from people. And you know, that's why some people go, that's how you pick your PT is based on what they specialize in really. And if you're working in such competitive industry, you've got to have that and hone it down so people know what it is you can deliver.
That's amazing advice. I think everybody does need their USP. And we've had like some great quotes on this podcast before. So I think I had a guest on, Joanna, and she said, if you focus on your weaknesses, you become strong. If you focus on your strengths, you become unique. So
ooh, that's a good one.
Focus on your strengths, right?
Wow,
and there
right,
you go.
Cool.
That's how you get your USP. But where was I going with that? Like I just said that, like comment. Yeah, like with like the Kira app and with your classes, you were doing them from home.
Mm-hmm.
And like I've seen you do them, I've seen your Instagram. How do you keep up the energy?
It's like I always wanted to ask. Do you know, as I'm getting older, I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
But it's like, honestly, because you are on camera, it is like, right, you're on, go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a performativeness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just always had it, I guess. You know that, I know that I've been to enough bad fitness classes.
Yeah.
That you like, hello, like, what are you trying to do? You're trying to lift people's energy here. That it just, I knew how I would want to be trained,
mm-hmm.
and that's what I have to deliver. So it is just, it's a job. You switch it on, you switch it off.
And on that note, what would you say makes like a bad trainer or class, and what makes a good trainer or class?
What makes a bad trainer is not genuinely being invested in people that are there or believing in yourself, maybe. That's what it all comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to believe that you're the best out there and you're giving the best classes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what we do at Body by Kira HQ. And I can say that hand on heart because as trainers, we all go to each other's classes. I wouldn't be doing that if they were dead.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to believe that you're the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will become the best at it. You deliver that energy.
So do you still, with like the other PTs, when they're in your classes, if you see their form slacking, are you like back straight?
Yeah,
do this,
yeah.
Like shoulders yeah. back.
Have you seen
all
that,
of them
that video that someone did? It's like a little sausage. And look at it. And then I can't explain it. But I'll post it on my story.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what we do. That's what we're there for. You know, we want people to be able to get the best results. And if you're not correcting people's form, mm-hmm. then what's the point of you being there?
And you talk about, yeah, like getting the best results. In terms of like, if you're having an off day, but you still got to deliver a class, how is it that you make sure that you bring your best self and deliver what needs to be done?
I think it's like in any job, it is very much switching on and switching off. You're there, you're getting paid to be there, you've got to do it. Your problems are your own problems and no one else needs to know about them. It may be hard, but I find, honestly, I could go in, when I do my classes on a Tuesday, I go straight from work into class. And for me, doing that means by 8 o'clock on a Tuesday, I am completely switched off from anything. Anything that annoyed me in the working day is gone because I put on that performance for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good way to just block out everything out. Mm-hmm. It's a good, that's all it is. So you might be having a hard day. You just go, right, okay, let's go. And it like exercise does, it makes you feel so much better for it.
I hear it. And we spoke about this with town planning. In terms of like common misconceptions with like the fitness world, what would you say is a common misconception?
I don't know. How can I do it without French aid? No, I don't know. I think in the fitness industry, there's a lot of people that aren't doing it 100% for the client. Like you've got to be invested in the client and what they want. It doesn't matter about, like, put your ego to the side and just make sure that they're getting the best out of their hour with you.
Okay, so so I'm just gonna like re-say that back so I've got that right. There's people who are kind of just in it for themselves rather than in it for the like well-being and development of the people involved.
Yeah, especially like in this day and age, like we're in a cost of living crisis. If people are offering to spend X amount of money an hour on with you, you need to make sure that you're spending the best time with them. And I say this, like, I go to a Pure Gym, you just see the PTs, they're so uninterested. Mm. And it's so frustrating because that could be the most important hour in someone else's day. And it's challenging because when you go from clients, like today I had clients kind of 8 till 1:30, and you've got people telling you their problems. But that one, I remember one of the girls saying this to me before, that is 1 hour of their day. Okay, it may be 6 of yours, but you've got to give client number 5 the same energy you gave client number 1. Mm-hmm. And they could have all been telling you the same stresses and gone through so much drama that week, but they're relying on you and you've got to come with the fresh energy and
it sounds
put your
like
stresses to the side.
It sounds like the new barbershop.
Yeah, it's therapy, honestly. Sometimes I'm like, you come through what?
How do you deal with people who are not consistent? So I know myself, I say, yeah, I'm going to go to a gym 4 times, 5 times this week. And then it gets to 7 a.m. and I'm like, nah, this is long. Obviously, you're going to have clients who are supposed to see you. They don't. Like, what's your approach to that when they miss out?
You've got to learn to not take it personally. They either want to do it or you don't. You know, you've got an element of responsibility to try and push them and get them to come. But if someone doesn't want to do something, you can't force them to do it. Mm-hmm. And I remember you have times when there's no shows or people just moan the whole session. You're like, this is a very long hour for me, but cool, I'm here. Let's do this. But yeah, you learn to not take it personally. Try and support them as much as you can, but they are their own person at the end of the day. They're either going to give you 100% or they're not.
And like at the end of the day, maybe they've paid for it. So you just reschedule the session or whatever. Like, it's on them.
It goes against what I said about, you know, giving 100%, but it's true. Sometimes you're like, well, I've got clients that just chat through probably 80% of the session. I'm like, okay, should we go now? But they're just like, no, so what about? I'm like, okay, cool.
Really?
Fine, whatever, I understand it.
Mad. And what about diet versus exercise? So like, I've got like some friends who, you know, they're like fitness influencers and they post some stuff online about like common misconceptions, like just don't do anything over the top, do things in moderation.
Yeah.
What would your advice be from like a nutritional standpoint?
Oh, 100% in moderation, but life is for enjoying. It's not, I mean, not everyday enjoyment. Just understand what works for you and what doesn't. There's no point going so extreme 4 days a week, for example, and then blowing it out the window for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It doesn't work. Just find what works for you and have a happy balance, because that's all that matters. And if you're doing it for something, you know, like a bodybuilding competition, or you've got a holiday coming up, cool, you might go extreme, but you need to have more of a holistic approach on it all and a healthy relationship with food. And it's easily done. I've fortunately never had any problems with a relationship with food, but people overcomplicate it.
The thing is, you say that people overcomplicate it, but have you ever had Sainsbury's finest cookies? Because the hold that the cookies have on me, I just
especially
can't
when they're warm. Wow,
stop taking them off.
But you don't
the
need
shelf.
To have a five. Just have one. Then have another.
It's like Pringles. Once you pop, you can't stop. But I don't know what rhymes with cookies. But yeah, I just need more. But no, I hear that. And in terms of like yourself as well, like when you're, like you say, preparing for a holiday, I wouldn't say bodybuilding competition. Are you like somebody who like tracks their like macros and all that
stuff? Oh, not anymore. Honestly, you know, like life is too short. Okay. I definitely did when I was younger. And I look back at photos, I'm like, wow. How did you get there? Yeah. But that was proper like eating string beans, sweet potato and chicken. Like that was the bad times. Mm-hmm. But no, now I just feel as, you know, my ripe old age of 32, I'm like, what am I doing it for? For a cool Instagram snap.
Yeah.
Like really there's more to it than that. So for me, the older I get, it's very much about balance and understanding how to be happy in yourself. And especially I would say over the last 2 years, it's all about being strong. I'm like, I want to be strong. I don't need flat stomach or abs. It's just being the strongest version of myself.
That actually brings up something that I want to discuss, right?
PBs?
Yeah. No, but you talk about being strong. Some people talk about cutting. Can you do both at the same time?
Technically you can build muscle and cut, but it's just such a long process. It's easier just to pick one or the other. Mm-hmm. If genetics work with you and you can bulk without putting on weight, as in like it will just go to your muscles, then cool. But really it's hard to build that proper muscle if you're cutting, because you need to be in a deficit.
I hear you. But if you put yourself in a deficit, you don't give yourself enough energy to
smash
out.
To build the muscle. And to
I know
it's
thing,
little
man.
Things as well, to allow the muscles to recover, to build and all of that. Like, you'll just feel depleted.
So. How many days a week do you train?
Really? The honest answer or the trick? No. At the moment, I'm doing three.
Really?
Four.
No, so sorry, I shouldn't be saying that. Make you feel bad. Okay, sorry.
Because I'm from holiday, let me live.
I was expecting to say like eight.
No. Okay. I went through a period where I was definitely overtraining. Now like 4 to 5 is max. You need to have the rest time. Like that's definitely something I see quite a lot, is people overtraining, and it's like, what are you doing it for? You need to let yourself breathe. So yeah, at the moment is 3, I would say.
Yeah.
No, it's about 3, but I aim to do 4 to 5 is a sweet spot for me.
See, that's what I say as well, but I never do it. And oh my God, what was I just about to say? So yeah, for me, I need some like personal advice, right?
Okay,
so
let's go.
Whenever I go to the gym, I just do the same thing. Like, do I need to just do a program of, okay, for 8 weeks, I'm going to do heavy lifts to try and get strong? Because I want endurance. Like, I go to some classes at Third Space, you know, if you want to sponsor, run me some peas, please. And when I go to the classes, it's like, I was doing 10 kg shoulder press, and man couldn't do it because after he had to do push-ups, and I had to do, like, throwing it up above my head. And I'm like, damn, I've got no muscular endurance, but I want to be strong. So how do I get strong and endure?
Are you paying me for this session, or
we can figure this out after?
I think it depends what you want as well. That's the thing. Like, if you do a program and it was a strength program, you'd be doing the same 4 sessions. No, you'd be doing 4 sessions for the right. How am I explaining this? If you did like a push pull and 2 lower body days, those 4 sessions would remain the same for 4 to 6 weeks. Like, you don't change it, because that's how you get the growth. That's how you put your muscles under the tension, and you do the same thing. It's not exciting. You're not doing backflips. You're not doing burpees into star jumps and polies.
Yeah.
It is a very simple program. And that's what people don't like, because they're like, well, the same thing. Even now, I go to Pure Gym in Monument. It's such a nice one. You know where? Below Wagtails. And it's the same in the city.
We're not
nice.
Plugging that. Third Space only. No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
And I see the same people in there doing their morning workouts. And honestly, I could tell you, there's like certain people, I could tell you what the next 3 exercises are going to be.
Okay.
Because that's all you do. It's
their condition.
Thing. Yeah. But people, I understand why people love classes, because you don't have to think about stuff. You don't have to do reps. And they are sick, especially for endurance. But you're never going to be doing mad weights
that.
So it's finding what the balance is.
Yeah, no. I hear that. And I think the reason why I've kind of asked the question is because I used to go to the gym with a couple of training partners who you'll know. And since COVID has happened, I've never been able to recover the strength I had pre-COVID. And it's just like, no matter how many times I do chest on a Monday, like it's a bit...
You would go for like hours at a time.
Yeah, but that's because we were talking.
And then one of you would have noodles from a packet.
Yeah.
One of you would have just chicken and rice.
Yeah, but...
A little bit more lees.
Okay, so moral of the story is I got to do the boring stuff and I have to do it programmed with like progressive increases over time if I want to see the benefits.
Yeah, of strength training for sure.
Okay.
Sorry to break it to you.
Okay, this is good to know. Good for my mental. I'm going to figure this out.
But all also, right. Sorry, it's not fun and it's not like, it's not exciting, but it's so... If you're genuinely in it for the strength, it's so satisfying because you see it going up every week. You're like, this is it.
Yeah.
I'm a baby.
Yeah, but then sometimes I just get like a bit shook that I'm going to like drop the weight on myself. Like I do chest and like, cause I don't have a, is it better to have a spot than not have a spot? It is. Cause you can push harder,
you're
right?
Push harder. Yeah.
See, I need to
and you got the security.
Give me someone. Yeah.
Well, no one's going to join you from third space. We're in a cost of living crisis.
We got to work. Just give me some extra memberships, please.
Couple of free pay passes.
The thing I was going to say, so yeah, obviously you do PT. We spoke about town planning. What's the most rewarding thing of being a PT?
When people are happy and they see the results and they're genuinely gassed by it. Mm-hmm. Like you might get a nice message to be like, oh, I haven't been able to fit into this dress. It depends on what their goals are, but like haven't been able to fit into this dress and now it fits me. Or I had one client, she's an absolute babe. And it was just about having a better relationship with herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she did it and we went through quite a lot together and it was just so satisfying because as a person, she completely changed.
Yeah.
It was so great, especially when people are always going to do it for aesthetics, for a wedding or a holiday, but when people are just doing it for themselves, it's amazing. It really, really is.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And I got asked the inverse. What would you say is the most stressful thing about being a PT?
People not being serious.
It's just, that's it. It just wastes your time.
Do you know, you're like, it's exhausting. I know you're paying me, but you're not being serious. Come on.
And what would you define as not being serious? Like not willing to like max out, like they just give up after two reps or like talking or just a bit of
everything? No, do you know what? I love people talking and okay. I love, like everyone's going to struggle. It shouldn't be easy. But I think the thing that I struggle with is you need to be doing more than your session with me. What are you doing outside of that?
Because
then every week all you're going to be doing is, oh, I still haven't seen this. You're going to be quite negative about it because you give 1 hour out of however many hours in a week.
It's not
going to do much.
Well, so people literally come to the gym.
And then they might not do anything else. And it's like, okay.
Really?
Can't work miracles here, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the... But again, if you're just doing it as like a switch off hour, it depends the purpose of it. But if you want to see more and you're not giving me any more, then all you're paying me for is that 1 hour. Whereas if it's online coaching, you know, you've got me 24/7 through the month. That's a different thing. But as PT one-to-one, you need to be able to give me a little bit more outside.
The definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome. To get where you've never got, you got to do things you've never done. All the things I'm learning to just hit you with it.
Camera lens,
you know. To anybody who's looking to get into becoming a PT, what would your advice be to them?
Just do the level. Just do the qualifications.
Just do the qualification.
Anyone could do it.
There's no like advice. Like think about it. Make sure that you want to, you know, help people. Don't be in it for yourself based on what you've just said.
There's so many cowboys out there. I think just do it. If it don't work out, it won't work out. You'll be fine.
Okay.
It's a good little hobby to have, you know.
Just a little good little hobby. And sorry, something I didn't discuss earlier, but I want to discuss it now. Being a female, like, you know, you've mentioned the fact you go pure gym. Do you feel safe in like a normal gym? And what I mean by that is like, you see like Joey Swole and people who post online of like girls who are like filming themselves and they're like, that guy's ogling at me. This guy's doing this. This guy's trying to chat me up. Like, as a female, how do you feel about like being in the gym around men?
Yeah, fine. Because I'm a bad bee. So
that's it.
Everyone all right?
That's it.
But also I'm like, if you see me in the gym, I don't care. Like I'm sweating from everywhere. a lot of girls, rightly so, like make the effort for the gym. They put it all in. So people,
you think it's rightly so that people wear makeup to the gym to sweat it, to sweat it off?
Not makeup, no. But I mean, like nice little two pieces, like cool, whatever. You want to feel great. I don't do that because I'm just like, I'm here to sweat and I'm ugly. So I don't think, I think I'm just a little gremlin walking around like, it's this girl. But you know, it's hard because you want to be like, don't look at me. You don't deserve to look at me. But it's kind of a bit of a pumped up environment for everyone. You know, like I even find myself like, no, I mean, I don't. I find myself looking at men, but like,
I know what you mean.
Looking at everyone. Yeah. I'm watching other people's programs. I'm like, wow, he's like, that's quite strong. And they're not necessarily looking at you being like, oh yeah, I want a piece of that. They might be like, wow, she's really strong.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I know people are staring at me. They're thinking, wow, well, pocket rocket. She's well strong.
There you go.
I know they are.
So basically, to any girls who might feel uncomfortable, actually, let me not just say girls, to anybody who might feel uncomfortable, maybe just change your perception. Yeah. Maybe those thoughts you have in your head aren't the thoughts that are going through people's thing. And I think, yeah, to my point as well, when I go, I just focus on myself. Just do you. Yeah. And if people want to do up weirdo, that's on them. Yeah. And hopefully they don't, you know, move mad. Hopefully there's some staff that can help if things get mad.
Don't go in unstaffed hours.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you're always going to get creeps, come on. But yeah, just don't. Don't get caught up in that, because otherwise you're going to be like every rep, be like, and then they are going to stare because I'm like, but you're staring at me. Like,
exactly. It becomes self-perpetuating, doesn't it? So this has been great. I mean, we've spoken about like the two jobs. You obviously sound like such a productive person. What would your advice be in terms of like productivity hacks for anybody? I ask that so bad. Like, do you have any productivity hacks?
No. My productivity hack is getting up. It's not really a hack, but I think it's so important to start your day right. Mm-hmm. I'm a 5:30 girl. I'm up. I have that time in the morning for myself before anyone else can interrupt me. Mm-hmm. And it's like they're such precious hours because I use that time to think about the day ahead rather than waking up half an hour. I've got to leave my house in half an hour. Like, it's a really valuable time to me.
So if you wake up at 5:30, I mean, I'm shivering just hearing that. What time are you going to bed?
I'm in bed by like 10 latest.
Okay, I thought you was going to be like 8 or something. I was going to be like, are you crazy?
Give me a break, 10 o'clock.
Okay, 10 o'clock. All right, a little 7.5 hours.
Yeah,
I need my 8 hours, but okay. Each to their own. And, you know, from both the town planning side and the PT side, what are some skills that you see amongst like the most successful people in both disciplines?
Confidence, 100%. Confidence, you've got to believe in yourself. Being able to work with difficult people, that's a big one as well, kind of the negotiation side of things. Mm-hmm. And I guess more so in the town planning side, but being a bit of a mediator to be able to balance between kind of difficult people mm-hmm. and yourself and your views.
Do you have a good work-life balance?
Yes.
Do you believe that?
I do now, yes. I have a better one now. I never used to, but now I do.
And something that we're going to start doing in season 2, which we're going to, you know, continue throughout the season, is hopefully shed some light on like salary and salary ranges. So from a town planning standpoint, do you mind shedding light on, you know, what the opening salary is? So when you first get into it versus like a range that you're at now after X amount of years?
Yeah. So I think the starting kind of as a graduate or an assistant planner, which is your starting role, is around 28,000,
okay.
Like late 20s. And then as you start to move up, it's like an additional $5,000, $5,000, $5,000. So after a couple of years, you're probably around mid 30s. 4 to 5 years, you're probably around late 30s, early 40s. The jumps aren't that big. Mm-hmm. And then when you're kind of more senior, I think it's anything from 50 upwards, really.
Okay.
But it depends on the companies you work for. Some of them are, that I've got friends that are probably earning 10 to 15 grand more than me, and their bonuses are mad. But at what cost is that? You know, you're in a big corporate company and probably not getting the balance. So what do you do it all for? I think that's a big thing.
That's real. But that's what, look, to anybody who's listening to this and wants to get into town planning, maybe that's going to stop them in their tracks.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to get the 6 figures.
Hang on a second. Maybe it'll get me to review it. And then, maybe there is. I just don't know. Maybe if you're like directors of really big companies. But I don't know anyone in that level to know that's how well they're doing.
Yeah, I hear that.
Like partners, like proper EPs and equity partners.
Yep.
Yeah.
I hear that. And then from like the PT inside, what can a PT expect to make from like your one-on-one sessions, your classes?
Yeah, I think this is one is a bit of a tricky one because it's how much you're willing to put in. And I, again, because I've got friends of such different areas within the industry, I've some that are so successful because they've got thriving apps and online coaching, and I can't even begin to imagine what they're pulling down every month. Probably, they're probably in 10 to 15 grand a month. Yeah, I reckon some of them
are.
But at the lower level, because I've never really done 100% of it, I don't know what the salary could be. But yeah, definitely the most successful ones are about that. And then on top of that, you get sponsorship deals.
Yeah.
And that is where you are
really
laughing.
Cleaning up.
Yeah.
Okay.
But remember to pay your taxes, guys.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. And your pension pot.
This has been so good. So from a fitness standpoint, you know, we've spoken about time planning. Where do you see yourself in the next 5-10 years?
Sitting on a beach in Antigua.
Okay.
Where do I see myself? I think I would like to have a nicer balance between the two. As in, it's a good balance now, but I think it would be a bit more of an equal balance between doing nothing, doing town planning and doing fitness. Maybe like 2-2-2.
I hear you. And just a final thing before we get into the quick fire round, any other general advice you want to give the listener today?
Just actually, I would say when it comes to like choosing your career or what you want to do, don't stress. If you're not happy, you can just move. You can restudy whenever you want. You can find a new career. You can find a new side hustle. You know, mm-hmm. nothing is permanent, I would say. Like if you're listening to this, you're like, wow, her life sounds great. You can be a town planner and a fitness instructor too. Yeah, that's what I would say.
So thank you so much for this, man. This
no
has
worries.
Been fun. Wonderful. Now we're going to get into the quick fire round.
Okay.
So we can get to learn a little bit more about you.
Sure, okay. Let's go.
Work from home or work from the office?
Work from the office.
Money or happiness?
Happiness. Oh, awesome.
Favorite day of the week?
Thursday.
Time in a group or time alone?
Big time star. Alone.
Oh, okay. Would you rather travel to the past or future?
Future.
Nice. Favorite book?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Okay. Just going to quote something from GCSEs. All right.
I'm not a big reader. Can you
okay,
tell?
Yeah.
Or Mice and Men.
Night out or night in?
Night in.
Who has it easier, men or women?
Oh, it depends, but just because of the discussions we've had, I'm going to say men.
There is a question here. Name a book you think everyone should read.
Of Mice and Men. No, do you know what one is good? Stolen Focus.
Okay.
By Johan Harry. It's a really, really, really good book. It's all about stolen focus, mm-hmm. but it's about how we become so distracted and the importance of having focus. And it's a really, really, really great read.
Okay, nice. And then just final one. And this is not a plug for me, but are you actually listening to any good podcasts? Do you listen to any fitness podcasts?
I don't listen to fitness ones. I listen to Off Menu, okay. which is hilarious, with Ed Gamble and James Acaster. And I've just started listening to, I can't even remember what it's called now, but it's with Micah Richards,
Alan
Shearer and Gary Lineker. I can't remember what it's called.
It's not the overlap one.
No.
That's a different one.
They do it like 3 times a week and it's so good. They just chat, but it's about like the most recent stuff in sport and they do it really well.
Okay.
Because they talk about like match of the day and like the latest fallout of the England game, but they talk about their own experiences as well and it's quite funny.
All right.
You know, and you sit there and you really laugh to yourself. Like, yeah. Like a freak on the train. But
you listen to all 3 episodes every week?
No, not every week.
I was about to say,
just
damn.
Just now and then. I look at the blurb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then just click on those.
Go ones. From there. That was supposed to be it, but I'm going to keep going.
Sure.
In terms of like keeping your finger on the pulse from like a fitness standpoint, is there anything in particular that you do or people that you follow and people that inspire you?
Not really, because in terms of following people, there's so much, as you mentioned earlier on, maybe at some point, there's so many fads and there's so many trends, so you just have to make sure that what you're doing is what you really want to be doing. But in terms of education, there's a website I use called Lift the Bar Plug, mm-hmm. and they are so good in terms of additional education and what you can get from them. And I spoke about the courses. That's kind of the best thing that I do, just in terms of making sure that you're constantly educating yourself and delivering the best service.
Amazing. Lift the Bar Plug. I love it. Sophie, we do have a closing tradition.
Right.
Based on everything that we've discussed today and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 16-year-old self, and would you still be doing the same thing?
Okay, I would say, which I've already said it, is that okay? Can I repeat myself?
Yeah,
I would say nothing is permanent. Remember that nothing is permanent. And that goes down to like really small scale things to large scale things. Like if you're not happy, you have the power to change it. And okay, it may be difficult at certain times because you may find yourself in a sticky position or you can't just quit a job. But there's always an alternative. You can always find a way out of things that will make you happier in the long run. And you've just got to see, kind of plan out how you can get back to happiness if you ever lose the happiness.
And would you still go down the same route, knowing what you know now?
Nothing else I can do, is there?
What do you mean?
No point. It's never too late. Nothing's permanent.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've liked it. I've enjoyed the journey so far.
Amazing. Amazing. And as I always say on this podcast, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey. I don't even know if I believe that. I've been saying it so much.
It is, but the destination's also nice.
Yeah, exactly. There
like,
we go.
Like, for example, the plane ride to the Caribbean might not be great, but when you're in the Caribbean, it's great. So the destination's better than the journey in that one.
And on that, and on that brain dazzler, Sophie, I want to thank you so much
for
coming
in
today.
No, thank you for
having me. Final plugs. Where can people find you?
On Instagram.
Yeah.
_ Sophie Hardy.
Yeah.
On the Body by Kira app, where we've got lots of fabulous trainers at Body by Kira HQ. I think that's everything. LinkedIn, if you want to know a bit more about planning.
Amazing. Guys, Sophie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been great. This has been another episode of What My Best Friend Does. If you don't know, now you know. Over and out.